Article 1 of the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights states that all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. Hi, I'm Sydney Clausen-Rosewarne, and you're listening to the Article 1 podcast. Article 1 is a magazine dedicated to documenting and examining some of the human rights issues Canadians and people around the world face today. It's published by Mount Royal University journalism students in Calgary. This series is produced as part of the Community Podcast Initiative and powered by Shaw. Mount Royal sits on Treaty 7 territory, a region with a rich culture and history and a long tradition of storytelling. At Article 1, we respect and admire those stories and are committed to collaborating with First Peoples in our work. We acknowledge the hereditary keepers of these lands, the Niitsitapi, Yahe Nakoda, Sutina, and Métis peoples. In this episode of the Article 1 podcast, we're going to take a closer look at contraceptive access in Canada with Sarah Eftikar. She's a nurse practitioner, Access BC campaign volunteer, and health equity advocate. Access BC is an advocacy group that's been pushing for free prescription contraception, but also removing any barriers to access that people might face, such as limited access to clinics in rural or remote settings, or healthcare practices that enable discrimination. And the group has succeeded at removing the cost barrier in BC. As of April 1st, 2023, British Columbia will be the first Canadian province to provide free contraception, excluding the patch and the estrogen ring. BC has now set the tone for removing the cost barrier to accessing contraception. But this is only the beginning of reforming our healthcare and policy systems to ensure gender equity through healthcare.
Starting April 1st, prescription birth control is going to be free in British Columbia. We know cost varies, but it really adds up. For someone who pays $25 a month for birth control pills, that's $300 a year in savings, and as much as $10,000 in savings over their lifetime. Mr. Speaker, as a mom of two daughters and five granddaughters, I know the effect this is going to have on people's lives in our province. This is a win for health, and it's a win for gender equity in our province, and it's about time. The days of passing down these costs to women, trans, and non-binary people are coming to an end.
Here's Sarah Eftikar with Access BC. Could you tell me a little about your role and experience that has led you to advocating for contraceptive access with Access BC?
Yeah, so as a nurse practitioner, I had many patients who were facing barriers in accessing contraception, specifically because of the cost of it. So for example, I was working at a clinic where we did medical abortions for people who had unwanted pregnancies. So they'd come in, they'd do blood work, and that was all covered by our healthcare system. They'd go get the pills, and that was all free by the healthcare system. That maybe they would choose to do surgical abortions, or maybe the medical abortion had complications, and they'd go to the hospital, that was all covered. Maybe they had complications and they needed recovery in the hospital, that was all covered by our healthcare system, and then afterwards it'd come in for blood work, for a follow-up, and that was all free. And then, you know, most of the time in their follow-up, they would say, okay, well, you know, I don't want this to happen again, so what can I do? And, you know, we talk about the IUD as one of the most cost-effective methods of contraception, or even we talk about the pill, and they would say, well, I can't afford that, or that's too much money for me. So our system was completely backwards, I thought. How are we providing so much money and resources to providing free abortion to people, but then not giving them free contraception? It didn't make sense to me. And when, you know, in the US with the abortion ban, a lot of people talked about, oh, you know, we're so lucky we can have access to free abortions here and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, for sure. And that the fact that we have that is amazing and it should be covered. But I just thought to myself, like, how is it that we can't give people free contraception? To me, it really didn't make sense. The cost of, you know, $500 for 5 years for an IUD, and coming up with $500 as a young person or as a student, or even as a working person, like how can people afford that? Or even like $250 a year for the pill, that costs a lot of money for a lot of people. So it produced a lot of barriers, and I saw that, and I thought to myself, how can I not advocate for a systems change? I need to be involved in, I need to play a bigger role in advocating for my patients, in creating change at a policy level.
But I think what also maybe some people don't realize is like, women don't want to have to get abortions.
Yeah, I mean, the emotional stress that comes with having an abortion, whether it's surgical or medical, the complications for a lot of women experience from it, the bleeding that goes on because of medical abortions at home, people have to take, you know, sometimes a week, sometimes even longer off work to be able to just physically recover from an abortion. It's not just an easy, you know, you go get a pill and then that's it. And it stays with them for a long time when they decide to have children later on in their lives, or even if they don't, it's always like, oh, I've had a pregnancy before. Like, it always stays with them. So it's really important that we try and avoid that as much as we can.
And you kind of touched on this a little bit, but how have you seen the cost barrier to contraceptives negatively impact people who can get pregnant?
A lot of people who didn't want to become pregnant and end up with an abortion, it's because they couldn't afford to get the pill, or any other form of contraception, as cost being a big barrier. But then also, I remember like in rural communities, the cost was a big barrier, and also not having access to the clinic to go to was a barrier as well. So I remember when I worked in a rural northern community, which was mainly Indigenous people, some of the young people were hitchhiking to the nearest clinic to be able to get birth control. And a lot of them were saying that they don't have like these youth clinics in rural and remote communities. So a lot of them had to pay for it. And that was a big barrier for them. And then I remember also working with a lot of postpartum women, and they had just, you know, for example, had a baby. They said, but then they were like, well, we're not ready for another child. We don't want to have another baby, and being on EI, you know, having really reduced income and not having extended health benefits. When we talked about the IUD, we talked about birth control. They were like, oh no, we can't afford that. You know, they'd have to, it just puts the onus on like the woman to have to afford that. So they'd be like, oh, well, I'll just tell my partner to get condoms. And so that's also like a form of like losing control of your own body and your own choice and autonomy when it's on the woman to have to pay for the birth control pill or for the IUD to prevent pregnancy, which is not fair.
Unfortunately, the options for men are extremely limited. I mean, obviously, as you know, Canada is the only country with universal healthcare that doesn't also provide universal contraceptive coverage. Why is this the reality in Canada?
I mean, to be honest, I don't know the system. The system is not working, and that's why it needs to change. I mean, I would go further to say that Canada is the only developed country that has a publicly funded healthcare system, but no universal pharmacare program, where all prescription medications should be covered and should be free based on our healthcare system, because it's not just contraception, but many people are taking other pills. Other medications for their diabetes, for their blood pressure, and they have to pay for it out of pocket, which is totally unfair. And I mean, right now it's a step in the right direction that BC is the only province of Canada to provide most contraception free of charge, but it's still not 100%. So for example, we see like the patch that's not covered and the ring that's not covered. And this is because the government, from what their response has been to Access BC, is that they've looked at all forms of birth control, and they've examined and analyzed its benefits versus the costs. And the patch and the ring, for example, are more costly, but objectively looking at bigger research, they're not as more effective as other forms of birth control. So that's why, as a result, they're not covered. But we have to remember that the government is looking at these types of contraception as only for preventing pregnancy, and not as other, not for other reasons why people are taking contraception. So for example, I have a lot of patients who are taking the patch because that helps them with menopausal symptoms. Or I've had patients with PCOS or certain mood disorders or acne or people who have really debilitating periods. They're all taking contraception, and that's not covered. So because the government is really looking at it as a way for preventing pregnancy. And I think it hasn't been covered. It's not, I mean, contraception is not covered all across Canada because there's a pushback with people saying, well, why do we have to pay for people's sex lives? Like, why do we have to pay for people not to get pregnant? I think there's this notion, this conservative notion that we don't want to be responsible for other people having sex. But the reality is that the research has shown that $95 million in public health care can be saved from providing free contraception. And then also just, I think just dates back to like patriarchy and men being in charge of what's covered and what's not covered. So I think those are some of the reasons.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, there's not just one reason, it's like a whole combination of like how we got to the system that we're in right now. Like you mentioned earlier, abortion is publicly funded as a medical procedure under the Federal Canada Health Act, I believe, and provincial healthcare systems. But federal government is kind of leaving contraceptive coverage still to individual provinces to kind of figure that out for themselves. Why is this problematic for Canadians who can get pregnant?
I mean, people are not going to be stagnant and living in one province, right? People are going to be moving around. They're going to have their families are in other places. Like, what if they're visiting family or they're going to another province for work or something like that, and then it's not covered in another province, so they have to come back to BC to have it covered. Or I think this is going to cause potentially people from other provinces maybe coming to BC to have to get prescription for contraception. And then, you know, we have to think about what are the consequences of that and what is the burden on the primary care providers in terms of writing these prescriptions. I think that there needs to be universal coverage federally all across Canada. And that's how we achieve gender equity in the whole country. I mean, how can we just say that it's only covered in BC, but another other provinces? We'd really need to make it a priority and look at it as, you know, a gender equity issue, but also a public health issue to have it covered all across Canada.
Yeah, and this one you might not have an answer for also, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Why are abortions covered but not contraceptives, which would you agree are less expensive and invasive in some ways?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, contraception is a way, I mean, preventing women from getting abortions is really, really important. It's providing lots of savings in the healthcare system, but also allowing women to be able to prevent from, as I said, like the emotional distress from abortions, from the complications that arise from abortions. To me, it doesn't make sense to me that abortion is covered but not contraception. I think maybe that we want to say that we're more progressive compared to the United States, and that's why we have abortion coverage. But then it doesn't really make sense. As I said, the system is backwards where we don't have contraception coverage. I think it's just related to the issue of patriarchy, men being in charge, men being decision makers. And we'd really need to have more females and also male allies to be able to advocate for contraception for all.
I kind of want to ask you a little bit about intersectional disadvantage and how this all like plays a role. From what you've seen as a nurse practitioner, how does intersectional disadvantage, as in like people's different social locations, experiences, identifiers, anything like that, that might be discriminated against systemically or systematically, impact contraceptive access?
Yeah, so the first thing I would say is, yeah, right now the most contraception is covered in BC, but do women from different cultural and ethnic communities know about that? So I think that one of the things is women who don't speak English, who are, who speak other languages, making sure that there is a lot of advertisements and a lot of media for women to know that it is covered. Because if a woman might want the IUD and maybe she got turned down or she's was told that it was costing $500 and she can't get it, so she's living with all these debilitating symptoms, or still thinking she wants an IUD, but because she thinks that it costs money, she's not going to go make an appointment with her healthcare provider to be able to get one. So I think it's really important that we reach communities that speak different language to actually just let them know that it is covered. The second thing is, I mean, we see BIPOC plus folks who work a lot more hours during the week or during the day than women who are white, the women who are educated, who are able to take time off work to be able to go to their primary care provider to be able to get contraception. So my other thing is, how are we making sure that BIPOC plus women are able to access the free contraception? So they're able to make appointments with their primary care provider, or they even have a primary care provider. I mean, when you don't even know the system or how the healthcare system works, how are you supposed to know that you're not supposed to have a family doctor? You're supposed to go there, get a prescription to be able to go to the pharmacy to get contraception. I mean, the process of it takes a while. It's not just an easy thing. And then how do we ensure that, for example, if a lot of BIPOC plus folks are able to take time off work, but they also have childcare to be able to go, and they also have means of transportation to be able to go to their primary care provider and get the contraception. So I think we really need to look at it from a structural perspective, as you said, an intersectional perspective, and see, okay, how can we reduce barriers for people who are, working 100 hours a week or so. Maybe they can get it from the pharmacy. Maybe they can get it over a telephone call. How do we reduce the barriers? I mean, having it free is one thing, but being able to access it is a whole other topic. And then the other issue, as I said, as I worked in a rural community, people were hitchhiking to be able to get birth control because there wasn't a medical clinic in their town or in their nearest community. So how do we ensure that we provide maybe the pharmacist with the ability to be able to provide contraception? The American Society of Gynecologists recommends actually birth control be provided over the counter. And I know there's some pilot programs in the United States where they're doing they're mailing contraception to people and they're having a virtual visit with a provider. So yeah, what if the government created like a whole bunch of nurse practitioners, nurses, and doctors as a team to be able to get this prescription contraception to people? I think that would be a great thing.
How do the existing laws and policies kind of reinforce these inequities like you're talking about related to contraceptive access in Canada?
We really need to have a universal pharmacare program where all prescription medications are covered under the system, because it's confusing when you tell people, okay, this is covered, that's not covered, this might be covered, but that's not covered. Like this whole, I think this is a bringing one, it's highlighting the fact that we really need to have a universal pharmacare program in Canada. And then also I am sure in the clinic where, I'll see people who are upset that their patch might not be covered or their ring is not covered when they've been on this type of contraception for a really long time and they have to try something new. And it's not an easy thing to be like, okay, I've been on the patch for the past 10 years and I have to try an IUD. There's going to be complications related to that. And then, as I said, I think it's going to bring up the issue of, as I said, Canada as a whole, looking at contraception as a feminist and gender equity issue, to be able to provide coverage federally, not just provincially. I think that's one issue that's being highlighted. And then, as I said, having access to the contraception. Reducing the barrier of cost, that's one thing, but how are people actually going to get it? And how are people going to know about it? So reaching out to different ethnic and cultural communities, educating them about the fact that it's free, and then ensuring that they're able to have access to it. And then just reducing the barriers for for primary care, reducing the burden on primary care providers by having everybody have a family doctor or a nurse practitioner taking care of their health. I think this is really going to bring up that issue because we're going to see a lot of people who are going to be coming into urgent care just to be able to get contraception. And that's going to cost the healthcare system a lot of money.
That actually leads quite nicely into my next question, which is about Canada's PharmaCare plan. How could the PharmaCare plan contribute to greater equity concerning contraceptive access through potentially eliminating the cost barrier?
I mean, I think it's going to reduce a lot of individuals coming in to emergency department, coming into urgent care, because they're going to be able to have medications for their chronic conditions. So people who may have diabetes, may have high blood pressure, people who may have mental health conditions, when they're able to access prescription medication and they're able to afford it they're able to get it for free and cost is not a barrier for them, then we're going to see reduced populations in the emergency department and the urgent care, which is going to provide a lot of savings in the healthcare system. I think it's really important because I know that in primary care, one of the things I always have to struggle with, which takes me even so much time, is when a patient is on a certain medication. It could be for migraines, it could be for blood pressure or diabetes. I have to like look up, okay, what's not covered, what's covered, what's going to be free under like the refugee healthcare, the IFH program, the interim federal health program that they're on, or what's going to be covered with their disability plan. And so it takes me so much time to look up all those things, and they keep having to come back and say, well, this medication doesn't work for me. And I say, well, that's the only one that's covered under your PharmaCare plan. And it's really frustrating because I have to take so much time out of when I could be seeing other patients, just look at what's covered and what's not covered. So having them be like, okay, well, you know, a lot of people, for example, metformin for diabetes doesn't work for them, causes a lot of GI upset. Whereas, okay, I can give you like another medication, but it's going to cost you a lot of money. People are like, well, I don't want that. And then they keep coming back and say, well, I have upset stomach. And I'm like, well, I can't, like, there's nothing, there's like I'm just so limited to what I can do because it's not covered. And I wish that I could give them another type of medication, but then they say, well, cost is a barrier for them. Or for example, a lot of times toe fungal infections, a lot of older adults, a lot of seniors who struggle with keeping their toes clean or who may have other conditions like diabetes. Medications for the toe fungus, it's like a type of nail polish. That's the type of medication for it, but it's quite expensive, so people can't afford it. So I have to give them oral medications because that's covered under people who are seniors or who are on the who are on EI and whatnot, or other types of or low income like health PharmaCare plans. But then they take the medication and they stop taking the medication because then it upsets their stomach so much, or they get really bad diarrhea from it. Then they come back to primary care and then they tell me, they're like, okay, well, I need something. And then I look at their toe and it looks even worse, and it just keeps getting worse and worse because the toe fungus has spread to other toes. It's led to an infection, and then I have to send them to emergency to take care of it, to get IV antibiotics, because from the very beginning they could have avoided all of that and just gotten the medication that they needed. So I mean, those are just like two simple examples, but it causes a lot of barriers for people, and they end up just revolving through the primary care system, and then if that doesn't work, then they'll just go to the emergency. And then another thing that I want to talk about is, for example, the issue of yeast infections, which is really common among women. So Canestin, lots of people taking it, but it's $30 for the one capsule. And that's a barrier for a lot of women. And that causes then other types of infections, and it just gets worse. And then they're not able to treat it, so I have to send them to a specialist. So, I mean, having universal coverage, first of all, it helps reduce my time in looking up what's covered and what's not covered. And then it's going to save the healthcare system a lot of money. It's a policy that just makes sense to me, and we need to implement it. And I think having contraception free contraception is a step in the right direction, but we really need to be able to have universal pharmacare program in order to achieve health equity. And I hope that the government has monitoring and evaluation plans for providing most contraceptions, that we can see the evidence and see how it really will work.
I mean, you mentioned this at the beginning, but BC did recently, not so recently, I guess it's been like over a month now, but announced that it will provide free contraception, as you said, with some exclusions come April 1st. Despite it having some exclusions, what does it mean to you that your work has led to this announcement in BC?
As an Access BC campaign volunteer and as a nurse practitioner, it's so exciting to see that the work that we have all put in as a team has paid off. So it really speaks to me about the fact that as healthcare providers, because I mean, I come from a healthcare provider lens going into this, that we really need to advocate for our patients, and we really need to make changes on a systems level when we see inequity, when we hear our patients' stories of inequity in the wider systems. We really need to be a part of creating that change. So to me, it just says that if we work together as a team, and if we create platforms for us to have a voice, we can really be an advocate for our patients and change systems and help with policies that are not changing our individual patients, but populations as a whole. It really is a success story. And I really hope that people who are, you know, in nursing programs or medical programs, or even other professions, they really understand that we have such a unique insight into how systems are impacting our patients, and they really take the time to reflect and think, what can I do about it? And they become involved in different organizations or form groups that advocate for patients, for their patients. And as I said, like, we're a success story. It really shows that if we all work together as a team, and if we're patient, and if we're willing to do the boring work, which is writing letters to MLAs, fundraising, raising awareness on our social media, we can be successful in affecting change, as cliche as that may sound.
Not cliche at all. How do you hope other provinces will follow the lead of BC's announcement?
I really hope that other provinces follow BC in providing free contraception. And I really hope that it builds momentum all across Canada to have a universal, federally funded pharmacare program. I think that if we want to achieve health equity all across Canada, and if we want to have better savings in our healthcare system and allow people to be healthier, to live life to their full potential, we really need to make free contraception and all types of medication free and accessible to everybody across Canada. It shouldn't be just one province versus the other. It should be all across different provinces. And I hope that other provinces reach out to us as a team, and they look at what we've done and they try and copy, which is totally fine, and advocate in other provinces to make this happen.
Just to close off here, is there anything else that you would like to add that I haven't asked about?
Yeah, so the other thing that I wanted to add is that we are talking a lot about the fact that prescription medication should be covered under a universal pharmacare program. But I just wanted to add that another thing that I wish, that I hope, and I hope that we advocate for is the free coverage and accessibility of menstrual products. I think that's the next thing that I would like to see here in BC and hopefully all across Canada. Providing universal contraception or providing most contraception for free will help with that, because a lot of people who may not want to have their periods can go on pill or other forms of contraception so that they don't get heavy periods or they don't get their periods at all. But the concept of period poverty is very much an issue, especially amongst young people. And it's a gender equity issue. And again, a lot of women are having to pay for menstrual products, not men. And that puts another burden on us as women and also other gender diverse folks having to pay for this. And with inflation on the rise, with many Canadians who struggling to save money, who want to reduce costs, I think that the next step in achieving gender equity, aside from a universal pharmacare program and having contraceptions covered, is having all menstrual products covered and accessible for all young women and gender diverse folks.
That was Sarah Eftekar, a nurse practitioner and health equity advocate. She's taken an active role as a volunteer with Access BC, advocating to remove barriers to contraceptive access in Canada. You can find the link to the group's website in the show notes. You've been listening to the Article 1 podcast. Thanks for listening. Article 1 is a human rights magazine published by Mount Royal University's Journalism and Digital Media students in Calgary. You can find us online at article-1.ca. That's the number one. This series is produced as part of the Community Podcast Initiative and powered by Shaw. I'm Sydney Clausen-Rosewarren, and thanks to artist Broke for Free for our theme song. It's called Daybird off their directionless EP. Thanks for listening.